This is Sheffield Live.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock on Friday, the 8th of April, 2016. My name's Jamie Veitch. I'm your presenter for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. We're broadcasting as ever, live here on 93.2 FM and from sheffieldlive.org, where this show will also be available as a podcast later. And there's a wealth of excitement on the Sheffield Live website, whether you like Northern Soul and Motown, rock, reggae, jazz, funk, swing, soul, UK garage, and much, much more. Check the Sheffield Live website, download a few podcasts, and discover some exciting new music. Anyway, in today's programme, we're talking about business and social enterprise. And we have an interview live in the studio with Ruth Lucas. Now, Ruth's got a fantastic, interesting and exciting business that she's launched, and she's going to tell us all about it. But before we turn to Ruth, a quick heads up. Coming up next week, it's the Social Enterprise Social in Sheffield. Now, it's an essential event for anyone interested in business, doing business for good and social enterprise. It's free to get along to, so all you need to do if you want to get along to that, takes place at the Hubs next week on the 14th, is find Social Enterprise Social on Eventbrite. Get your ticket there and it's free to go along to. Well worth going to, you'll meet lots of people, help progress your business, and you even get to eat something from a social enterprise cafe. So, before we turn to Ruth, it's just worth quickly flagging up that if you want to get in touch with this programme, you can do. You can email me, jamie at sheffieldlive.org. You can text 07904 272 200. You can find Sheffield Live on Twitter. You can find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter as well. And whether you're starting, whether you're running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employer, an employee, we're always keen to hear from you, get you involved. So, let's first of all turn then to our first guest. Well, we're also joined in the studio today by a broadcast journalism student from Sheffield University who's here helping our news team at Sheffield Live. Cheng Chen is in the studio with us as well. So good morning to Cheng Chen.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks for coming in. And good morning to Ruth Lucas.
Morning, Jamie.
So we've known each other. We've met at business events, as I go to business events in the city, you go to business events, and people in the business community bump into each other in Sheffield for a while now.
Yep.
And you've recently launched a really, really interesting business. Tell us about it.
Yes, I've launched a new pet product, basically. I don't know if you know the size of the pet market in the UK, but there are 9 million dogs living in the UK. The pet market in the UK is worth about £4 billion a year.
£4 billion, that's a pretty sizable market.
Yeah. And globally, it's about $100 million a year.
And you then are launching into that market, but that's because you're a pet owner.
I am a pet owner. I'm a pet lover as well.
I'm a
qualified riding instructor, been teaching horse riding for years. People say I teach horses. I say, no, the horses know what they're doing. I teach the people. I've had pets. I used to have a goat at one point. I've had cats. I have dogs. And I currently have a dog. And the reason I came up with my product is because my dog was my inspiration. I have a little Welsh Terrier. I travel a lot because I work. But I also travel to visit family, friends. And I take my dog everywhere. I basically, when I bought her, I decided I wanted to be able to travel her around. She was the kind of dog that would go everywhere. So from day one, we're going out, we're doing our own stuff, nice and calm and everything else. And I found that I was spending ages getting her ready. It was like, you know, 20 minutes, half an hour, packing the car with her stuff. And it was taking up so much space, and I've only got a little car. And then I was working one Christmas Eve, and I was managing a team in a company I was doing some management consultancy for. And I was travelling home to visit family in Cardiff, which, you know, from Sheffield is 200 miles. It's 4 hours. I said, oh, you know, my dog's really well behaved. It's Christmas Eve. Can I bring her in? That way I can go at 6, not a problem, straight off, get home at 10. And they were like, I don't know. It's a dog, you know, in the office and people. And I wouldn't have asked, but she's very well behaved. And then one of my colleagues jokingly said, oh, I'll put her in a bag, she's only little, bring her in, nobody will notice. And I was walking and thinking, what would I do with her stuff if she came in the bag? What if I had a bag, what would I do with all the stuff? And then I was like, oh, what if the bag converts to a bed? And I thought, I'll look online. There must be something like that. That's fantastic. That'll help me travel her. And I looked and there was nothing. And, you know, I carried on. And this idea stayed in my head, stayed with me, and it kept niggling away. And I'm one of those people, if something niggles away at me, I think there's something genuinely in there. You know, even if I've seen a pair of shoes and they've stayed with me for weeks, I know I want those shoes. And it just stayed with me, and I was still travelling. I was still spending 20 minutes, half an hour. I was just thinking, this time I am wasting, time that I'm taking up, could be doing other things, you know, packing the car up. And I kept looking, nothing. And then I thought, there's something in this. And I started doing some research, talking to people and, you know, talking to other dog owners. And they were like, oh, it's like packing a toddler up. It takes forever. Oh, yeah, I wish there was something like that. And then I actually, through business networking in Sheffield, met somebody who worked for a bespoke bag-making company. And they said, oh, we can make you a prototype. We can make this work. So I worked with them to design it. And then they had the terrible line drawings because, you know, I might be able to design things, but I can't draw. Unless you're like Lowry. Stick people I'm fine with, you know, but actually designing a bag. But they took my line drawing, we discussed it, and I will say, as a product development thing, I've spent more time talking about Velcro and dog hair than I care to mention.
Well, I should imagine. Yeah.
Talking about lumps in bags and how do you make things not be chewable, and, you know, how do you get things out of the way, and zips and hair and all those kind of things. So when you think about a product, it doesn't matter what product you're working on, you've got to think about how it's going to be used by the end user and, you know, what's its interaction with what you're going to use it with. So, you know, a mug interacts with a person. So you've got to make sure the mug's not going to scald them. You know, the handle's going to be comfortable to hold, etc. This bag interacts with a person and a dog.
And a dog too.
Yeah.
Okay, superb. So let's just unpack, if I can. some of that. But first of all, that's going to resonate with lots and lots of our listeners who are pet lovers. The frustrations or the problems that you clearly identified through experience of wanting to take your dog with you and be able to do so and look after your dog and make sort of safe, comfortable transport and so on. So, like lots and lots of innovations, inventions and great ideas, this has come from personal experience. And then a realisation that there wasn't anything out there that would meet your needs. Well, let's make it happen.
Yeah,
superb.
Absolutely.
And you've started talking about the process of design and product development. Now, how long has that taken from first thinking, I'd like to do this. There's a need for this. I'd like to do this, to where you are now.
I initially had the idea just over 2 years ago, so in the Christmas of 2013. And then, like I say, spent about a year with it niggling, thinking, and started properly working on it at the beginning of last year. Found the bag company and started working on it. And, you know, like I say, I did focus groups, talked to people. We actually had the bag. We went through the whole process. So this bag that I have created, or they have helped me create, include things like a thermal pocket to keep your food chilled.
Yes.
You know, we've got bowl pockets. You've got your bowls there. We've got small pockets. We've even got a foam pocket. I must admit, when I saw the first prototype and I opened it up and went, foam pocket, I laughed and went, what's that for the dog to make a phone call? And they went, no, because it's a bag. You use it as a bag. And one of the briefs I'd given them was the fact that as a bag, you know, as a woman, I will often take a handbag and another bag. But a man doesn't. So actually, if you don't want to carry an extra bag, you've got space for your things in it as well.
So really well thought out design in terms of how people will use this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great stuff.
And that's the important thing, though. If you're designing something, if it's going to last and it's going to work, it has to be well thought through.
Yes, it does have to be. And then that leads into the question of how well made is it? What kind of materials you use and why you choose the materials that you use, as well as the actual design that you've chosen, the final design, the materials.
Right. I decided I was going to go high-end spec. And I made that decision for the fact that I wanted a really good quality product. I don't like cheap stuff that falls apart. I wanted something that people could use and use. And when you think about how dogs interact with things, they are quite tough. They're quite tough customers. They can be quite hard on things. So we've used something called ballistic nylon, which is apparently used on the spacesuits at the International Space Station. And the reason that's, it's really lightweight material, but it's completely waterproof and it's rip-proof. It's really strong. You know, can you imagine out in zero gravity, you don't want something that's going to rip and, people dying on the International Space Station. So that material is really, really strong, but again, really lightweight. So it's scratch resistant. Now, it's not chew proof, but it's chew resistant because there are dogs that chew through bricks. So let's face it. But, you know, we do say to people, it is really strong material. It won't rip. You can carry it around. It weighs less than a kilo and a half when it's empty. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, we've put really lightweight bowls in it, so they have that. So the only thing that you're adding weight to it is the toys you put in and any food you put in. So you can carry it around. You know, it's lighter than my handbags, to be perfectly honest, because my handbag is one of those women's handbags where you're basically a hamster's nested at the bottom of it.
Sounds like my bag that I brought my computer in today. So I don't know what's in there.
Yeah, and like I say, we did the thermal pocket and everything. And the mattress itself is a memory foam style mattress, so it's nice and soft and it gives that resonance and it sort of like gives a nice comfort. But for me, it's convenient for you as a person. And the other point is I'm a dog lover, I'm an animal lover. I wanted a product that dogs were happy with, and all the dogs that have used it, I mean, my dog loves it. You literally say, go in your bed, because we say in your bed, and she just pops in the bag and like, yay. And we had a dog at Crufts who was also demonstrating it, and the woman who was demonstrating it had to buy the bag because the dog was like rolling around in it going, this is so great. And she was literally like, can I buy Suki, this model, a bag? Because she was literally like, Suki loves it, she wants it. But for me, it's about convenience for the owner, but it's also about convenience for the pets, because a lot of pets get very stressed when travelling. And what they have is something that smells familiar. They have all their familiar stuff in it. You know, their best favourite toys. You can just pop them in and you're ready to go. And when it smells like home, that's the thing. It's got the scent of home on it as well. And you can also get them used to it. I know people who put it in the back of the car, have it open as a bed in the back of the car, and the dog just sleeps in it.
Right, so it's that comfort as well. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm sure that listeners who have pets, who are pet lovers, will really, really recognise that as well. In fact, when I'm taking my cats to the vet and they have to climb into the cat carrier to go to the vet, that's never a pleasant experience for anybody concerned. It's all right getting them back home again. But
yeah. Well, they know that they're only going in the cat carrier when they're going to the vets, aren't they? I used to have a cat and they knew they only went in the cat carrier when they went to the vets.
Yeah.
And they were like... And then we used to have singing in the back of the car or howling.
Absolutely.
Very high-pitched singing.
So it's absolutely clear that this is an incredibly well thought out product. You've gone through a process of, I suppose, an iterative design process as well, in terms of making this fit for purpose as well. We then go into how you take the product to market and make the product happen. And that, of course, is a challenge for any business, any new business.
Absolutely. And I think that's the new thing about being a new business as well, and a new product, because it's a new product. You've got to get over that initial, why? We don't know this company. We don't know what this product is. But I got Virgin Startup, so I've got endorsement from Richard Branson and his team. So they've seen the product. They've actually seen how well made it is. They've gone through my business plan. So I have that endorsement. And the other week I got endorsement from Theo Perfitis. I won his SBS award on the 27th of March, which he gives to small businesses that he thinks are really solid, good ideas, you know, interesting products, interesting ideas and interesting businesses.
And from the point of view of giving the business sort of momentum, these kind of awards, that kind of recognition from someone like Theo Perfitis and his scheme is very valuable, presumably.
It is. I mean, the endorsement is really great because, as I say, with a new product, and for anybody who is thinking out there of creating anything or even just taking a new business to market, you haven't got a track record. That business hasn't got a track record yet. But actually having people who people genuinely know as being good entrepreneurs who understand the business world, recognising that you have something that is worthy of note, is a really great endorsement, as is getting the product out there to people. And at the moment, we are in a competition with Richard Branson to get funding and to take it to the next stage.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we're talking about this just outside the studio before we came in today. And let's bring Cheng Chen in, because this is a really interesting product, and it's something I'd never seen before I heard about it, before I heard from you about it, Ruth. Do you think this is the kind of product that is going to have an international appeal? Would you see this as being an exciting business?
Yeah, it sounds just very exciting. It's like you treat the baby dog as a human. Mm. It's like, sounds very humane and very well thought idea. I think it's really wonderful for a startup entrepreneur. And my question is, are you very confident about the market share for this product?
Well, yeah, I am confident because the feedback we've got, we took it to Crafts. I've had some real high-end retailers who want to stock it. I can't say for confidentiality reasons who they are, but, you know, they are well-known, recognised names that you will go, oh, that's really high-end. And the feedback we were getting from people and from people using the bag is fantastic. When you look at the pet market, there is definitely space for this. I mean, we've had the Devonshire Group of Hotels have asked us to come and do a photo shoot at their Bolton Spa Hotel. So we've had their endorsement as well. And when you're talking to other pet market owners and other pet businesses, even yesterday when I was on people were going, saw it at Crafts, it's fantastic. That's other pet businesses. And other pet businesses going, I'm sending this to so-and-so. I know they want this product. And there's a queue of people waiting for your product.
Yes, and having that kind of demand is fantastic. I mean, it's a really good question, Chen Chen, in terms of market share, isn't it? It's a sort of... because you've talked about the size of the market, the size of the pet market in the UK and internationally as well. And you must be trying to make projections. And as we all know, business planning is pretty difficult, particularly for startups. And you can make all sorts of assumptions. Absolutely. In terms of your cost and how much market share you might get. And, you know, the capital investment that you need, as well as the... not only the capital investment, but also the working capital that you need. And a few changes in percentage of what you might achieve in terms of that market share are going to make a massive difference in the size of that market.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the business plan this year is the way that we're getting it to market this year is through our PR, through online sales, and through doing major events.
Yes.
So that's the way it's going to market this year. The plan for next year is to try and get it into some retailers, but it seems to be that we might be slightly ahead of the curve on that for the fact that really retailers saw it at Crafts and are coming to us. And then the plan after that is to take it outside of the UK. Even though it's online, you can buy it online from the Rovaniter online store. So anybody globally can buy it. The idea is that we take it into, the US particularly, but nobody can put a figure on how many dogs there are, accurate figure on how many dogs there are in the world, but there's something like 250 million dogs.
Yes.
Now, of course, a lot of those aren't pets, they're working dogs or whatever, but from the pet market, if you only got 1% of that pet market globally to buy a bag, you're looking at 2 million bags a year, which is... massive, which is huger than anything I could even imagine doing at the moment.
That's an absolutely enormous potential there.
Absolutely.
But to make that happen, I mean, you talked about PR, you talked about marketing and getting that out, but then the capacity issue in terms of manufacture and supply and delivery
Absolutely.
And your supply chain.
Absolutely.
Now, talk to us about your supply chain.
Oh, okay. Well, that's the thing when you're starting a new business. I mean, my plan will have to change. My supply chain will have to change.
Yeah.
But one of the things is, at the moment, we've got stock. Well, I've got stock of the medium at the moment. The large is still in development, and we will do a run of large in the next few months. But the idea is I will be watching, monitoring stock and reordering as I see how it's growing. I think with a product, you need to monitor the stock, see how it's selling, and then kind of guess almost as accurately as you can as when the next order needs to be made. And obviously with my supply chain and the manufacturers who are helping me make the bag, they need to do a minimum run to make it worth it. So that means I've got to try and judge it. And that's the thing.
Yes, quite. Splendid timing.
But, I will be watching that and learning, and as we go through, we'll know when to get things moving quicker. But we are doing, because the demand is so high, we're doing it.
Right.
And people understand, and I've had that conversation with people, that because of the fact that it's a high end product, then you need to, if they need to wait for it, they need to wait for it. And people have understood that.
Yes, and that's the thing. I mean, if it's a product worth waiting for that people really want, I mean, you've made this happen because originally there was that need that you couldn't find anyone to fulfil. Now, people don't have to wait the couple of years that it's taken from gestation through to development through to being out there. If people have to wait a little bit of time because of demand, then that's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with this product, though, is it's not, because it is actually not just run off on a machine and all put together a machine. It is actually a lot of the components have to be hand put together and hand stitched together.
Yes.
So it actually, when you do a run and you get the manufacturers to do a run for you, they can't just churn it out in 2 hours. It does take a couple of days for them to churn out each bag.
Yes.
So, you know, you are looking at probably from ordering to me having it in stock each time, 4 months from beginning to end of process. By the time they've done the order, got it ready, got it checked, sent it to me, and I've quality checked it and sent it, you know, to be able to send it out, we are looking at 3-4 months. But that's why I was saying, I need to keep an eye on the process and work out when the order needs to go in so that I have stock in. And that's the whole thing about stock control. That's what you do in a stock control process, is go, when do I need to reorder?
Yes, indeed. So, I mean, in talking stock control and talking supply chain there, is there anything that you know now that would be useful for people coming up with other product-led businesses about working with a design team and working in terms of suppliers? What lessons have you learned that perhaps you wish you'd known when you started?
Working with a design team, especially if you don't come from a design background, is the language.
Right, yes.
You need to learn, you know...
It's like a code.
It's like a code, and they need to understand where you're coming from. So you need to be very clear about what you mean by what you're saying. And if you don't understand anything, check it. I mean, most design teams are all happy for you to check it. And don't just accept what somebody tells you, because it's like any world. We all talk in a nice code at times. I mean, I used to work on housing policy,
yes,
and I once did a presentation to a team of mine, and I did acronym bingo with them, because in housing world, people talk in acronyms all the time. And my point of doing this presentation in acronym business was acronym bingo, was to show them how we speak in code so much.
Which we do, yeah.
Yeah, and it's the same with the design team. They often speak in code, so you have to learn their language and you have to learn how to talk to them. And from a supply side point of view, it's be prepared. Be prepared for a shock sometimes. Because I was like, oh, yeah, you know, we'll make this bag and it'll take. And then they go, no, it's going to take us, you know, 4 weeks to do each, to even get it from, you know, starting cutting the pattern to even finishing it, you know. And you're like, OK. And these things take a lot longer sometimes than you think.
I'm sure they do. And how do you mitigate against that sort of risk? How do you protect yourself?
Well, I think, you know, part of it is being prepared for that. So, you know, making sure you've got enough time in planning. You know, my original plan was that I was going to do a soft launch in February and officially launch at Crufts. Now, because they actually had made the prototype so that I didn't need to do too many changes, because I'd been so clear on the brief and we'd talked about it so long, we didn't actually have to do too many prototypes. Whereas actually there are designs that go through 7, 8, 12 iterations of a prototype. And I think people need to be prepared that just because you've got an idea doesn't mean the prototype's going to be, you know, on the shelves, ready to go first time. But if you go through that process in detail, you won't have to go through so many prototype iterations. And you think about the prototype iteration, it takes a few weeks every single time. Even a small change will take a bit of... you know, they'll have to reset machinery or whatever they're doing.
Absolutely. Okay, brilliant. Well, you're listening to Business Live on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. And live in the studio with me, we're joined today by Ruth Lucas. Now, Ruth Lucas is talking about her innovation, her business, Rovernighter, a luxury all-in-one travel solution for dogs. It's a bag. It converts to a bed in less than 20 seconds. What's the record?
I've not timed it for my record, but I think I can do it in about 10 seconds. But I have a little video that is on the Twitter feed, which is on the Rovernighter Twitter and also on the Rovernighter page, of me doing it in 17 seconds.
17
from start
seconds.
To finish. And I think, yeah, it, you know, that was... But I was explaining it, so that was quite long.
Superb. Well, we're going to return to Rovernighter in just a few minutes. We'll come back because we've got lots more questions to ask you, Ruth, about the process of startup and ambitions for the year ahead as well. But before we do that, I think it's time for a quick track of music, and we're going to play a track which you've chosen. We'll ask you why after we've played it, but it's Bon Jovi, it's Living on a Prayer.
We're open for Business Live.
You're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. We were listening to Bon Jovi, Living on a Prayer, but Bon Jovi are not living on that prayer today, it would appear, or our CD player isn't anyway, my sincere apologies. But Bon Jovi, why did you choose them? I didn't kill the music, did I?
Why did I choose it? It reminds me of being in school and things like that. And I was always a bit of a rock chick. I used to like, you know, going out dancing. It reminds me of being at uni when we all used to dance around like mad things to Bon Jovi and Nirvana and, you know, everything else. And, you know, I think it's quite feel good as well.
Yeah.
You know, and upbeat on a Friday morning when you're driving.
Absolutely. Yes. So listeners, hope you enjoyed that little bit of Bon Jovi. So Ruth Lucas, you're telling us about Rovernighter, but you also told us a little bit about your background working in housing policy and working with local government association and so on. Now, the skills and the experience that you had in public policy, if you like, have those transferred? Have those been transferable, useful skills in terms of going into business?
Yes, because actually I was the lead lobbyist for the local government association in London and in Brussels. And somebody once asked me, what have you ever done as a lobbyist? And I was the architect of housing finance reform, which is moving the national housing finance system from local to from national to local control, £6 billion a year annual budget. So somebody, I went, yeah, I've done something, because somebody, you know, people often think lobbyists just talk, which is true a lot.
Yep.
We do a lot of talking, or lobbyists do a lot of talking, but the skill of a lobbyist is about negotiation and persuasion and thinking things through. You know, you're selling an idea to people as a lobbyist. You're not selling a product, you're selling an idea. Why should somebody buy that idea? Why should a minister buy your argument, not the next person's argument, to make a policy change? And also, as a policy person, you do a lot of research. And my partner actually says I'm like a terrier. I mean, I have got a terrier, but he says I'm like a terrier because I keep going. And I will keep digging. I will research and research. And if I've got an idea and I know it, I think it will work, I will keep going. I've got that terrier tenacity, which is probably why I have one. But, you know, that whole point about lobbying is about thinking things through, thinking the arguments through, presenting those arguments. And that is part of business as well. You've got a product. You've got to think about how you present that product. Now, as a lobbyist, you're going, why buy this idea? And I remember having a conversation with some of the program managers before the 2010 election. And one of them said, oh, well, we need to think about what we're going to tell the Conservatives. We need to think about what we're going to tell Labour. And I went, no, we don't think about a policy for them and a policy for them. We think about what is the best for local government. We then look at their manifestos and say, this achieves your manifesto because of X, Y, and Z. So we have the same policy. We just tell people this is how it wins.
You were demonstrating how that same policy fitted the elements in each of their manifestos.
Yeah.
So the process of selling an idea and of engaging people to perhaps be excited about the elements of the idea that are most relevant to them, that clearly then, alongside the ability to research, which obviously you've had to do an enormous amount of, those have been transferable and useful and beneficial in terms of setting up your business.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And, you know, the whole project management thing as well, if you're managing a process through a parliamentary process, so the stages of a bill, you know, when you're going to get things ready, their project management, and being able to deal with people, different people. You know, as a lobbyist, you deal with a lot of different people. You don't just deal with one set of ministers, you deal with all the other organisations. So in the housing world, you know, I was making partnerships with people like Chartered Institute of Housing, Shelter, whoever, and being able to deal with a range of people who are interested or interested parties in what you're doing.
Yes. So being able to, again, and actually you talked about acronyms as well. Mm. I was going to say taught the language, but I suppose sort of engage in the different special interests that people have and find the themes that work for them, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think from a business point of view as well, especially from, you know, new businesses, small businesses and local businesses, it's also people engage with the person.
Yes.
And actually one of those things about being a spokesperson for an organisation or part of an organisation is you need to be able to engage with people at different levels. And as a business person, you are your business to a large extent. You know, a lot of the businesses out there will maybe be there on their own or have one or two other people working with them. But as the head of the business, you are that business. You need to be able to engage with people on various levels, be able to present yourself as that business to them.
Well, quite. And I think that's an idea that's been discussed quite a bit on this programme as well. And I mean, it will particularly probably resonate with people running service-based businesses as well. Because if you're a really, really good accountant or a really, really good graphic designer or a really good management consultant, there are probably lots of other people who are also really, really good. And if you're choosing to engage that graphic designer or that accountant or that management consultant, then it's a case of you're going to buy skills, expertise, experience and so on. But actually you're buying values, most probably, and someone who you trust as well. And that you are your business clearly applies to service-based businesses, but it applies to all sorts of startups as well, absolutely. You have to get on with your suppliers and be able to trust them, and they have to trust you, and so on.
Yeah. Well, absolutely, and I think quite often we like to work with people we like.
Yes.
We don't, I mean, especially when you have a choice about it. I mean, it's different when you're in a business and you're employed in a business and there's 200 staff in a department. You can't get on with everybody. You know, that's just the nature of the world. But we like to work with people we like. We like to work with people we trust. And that thing is about values as well. I mean, one of the things you asked me about, why did I pick to do a high-end product? Because I wanted quality. I wanted something that I think could last. I want something that I would want. that I would be happy to use. And if I'm not happy to use it, why should anybody else be?
Why would you want to sell it to anyone else? No, absolutely.
And, you know, and if I can't believe in it, and I can't believe in my product, and I don't believe in the quality, then I can't get it out there. I can't be proud of it. And I think that's, as a business person, we need to think about what our core values are and what the core values of the business are. And, you know, maybe it's just getting a sale, but for most of us, it can't be just getting a sale, because if you just get a sale at any cost, you will not get a repeat customer.
No, you never would you? Absolutely. And if you're designing or selling a product that's meant to have a very long shelf life, you still absolutely care about your reputation. And you might not want to get a repeat customer from the point of view of you want that product to be designed to have a lifetime, of 10 years, 20 years, because it's high quality. But you still absolutely care that it's high quality so that your customers refer you and recommend you to other people as well, your reputation.
Well, exactly. And, you know, from my point of view, my product will last, but they will come back and ask for different things. So they might come back and go, we're going to do new colour ranges, we're going to do new inserts. So things like with the bag, the bag itself will last, but we've got a mattress cover, which you will wash, because obviously, again, we were talking about how do you keep it clean and all the other bits. You know, so people will come back and get a replacement cover at some point, because that's the thing that will wear out, because it's getting worn and it's getting washed. They'll refer their friend, or they'll get a second dog and go, oh, well, actually, I want another one. Or, oh, you know, my handbag I've had for 5 years, and I'm looking at it now going, like, it's really good quality, but I think it's starting to get a bit tatty. That time I maybe changed it.
Yes.
Had a new colour. So, you know, but you'll buy what you think is worth it.
Indeed. And so values in business, you're absolutely clear about the need for those. You've talked about previous experience being absolutely vital. Well, really, really valuable for you in terms of this business. Now, in the first... in the last year of getting the business and the product to market, have you been doing this full time, or have you been continuing working with other work as well?
I have continued with some other work.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, up until about Christmas, I was doing other work, and I sort of not. I started to reduce the other work that I was doing, because, you know, it's a business. The whole business cycle is you put a lot of money into a product, you are not making any money at the beginning.
Are
pumping. I mean, I literally was looking the other day, saying to somebody a couple of months ago, actually, before I went to Crufts, I just feel like I've got a tap and the money is going down the sink and the plug hole is out, because I was, you know, spending money like throwing money away. It felt like, not felt like, but you were spending a lot of money on various things. And that's what you do. That has to be done, and you have to accept that. And you aren't making any money at the beginning, because you are just spending it, getting everything ready. And, you know, when you've got no product to sell because it's in development, you can't sell it. And now, you know, we're at the process of trying to grow it and getting, you know, we're getting sales. And, you know, you have to go through that terror, I suppose, is the best way to describe it, of what if this doesn't work? You know, and you put a lot of work into it, but you just have to believe and keep going. And I mean, I was saying before we came in studio, Bank Holiday Monday was the day that I got told I'd won the SBS award from Theo Pavitas. But I was having a horrible day that day. I was going around going like, oh my God, you know, what's happening? You know, it was just felt like a very lonely, very, you know, scary place to be. And I am a very upbeat person. I mean, my partner calls me Pollyanna. He keeps saying I'm so cheerful, and it's almost sickeningly cheerful and positive. But, you know, even being a very positive person, there are moments when you think,
oh, yes.
You know, you think there's this precipice coming, what's going to happen? But you just got to keep going.
So again, I mean, this is something that will really resonate with listeners here. The need to have that sort of optimistic approach when it's very, very tough, but also the fact that starting a business, not being able to pay yourself, ploughing your money in, your own money and your time in. I mean, as you said, you were able to work last year on on other stuff too in terms of make a living, but it does come to that point where you have to put all your time into it and you can't take any, you know, you can't pay yourself. But it's that point where it's do or it's not going to happen at all, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think as business people, sometimes you just got to take a leap of faith.
Yeah, quite.
And I always think, what's the worst that could happen? It could fail. Yeah. That's the worst that could happen.
And is that as bad as not doing it all and wishing you had done it?
Well, you know, my point was, like, last year when I just, like, really got into working on it, is I thought, I've had this, I've had it, somebody's going to make it. I know somebody's going to make it because it's a solid idea. And it is a solid idea. I know that. It's been through the mill. I've taken it through the mill, talked to people. I know it's a solid idea. And I thought, I would sit there in 5 years' time with somebody else going, could have been a contender. And I think, personally, I don't want to live with that regret.
No, quite. So, here we are, up and running. SBS Award from Theo Pavitis on Bank Holiday Monday.
Yeah.
And, of course, what else? Well, you're already getting all sorts of attention.
Absolutely.
From the dog-loving community. There are lots of dog-related hashtags on Twitter. It's amazing.
Yeah, there are a lot.
Virgin Startups, of course.
Yeah.
And pitching competitions. So what's coming up? There's some really exciting stuff coming up, isn't there?
Yeah, well, I'm pitching to Richard Branson in Voom. I don't know if people have seen the adverts. We want votes because basically the top 80 get through to the shortlist. And I'm currently lying about 40th. So I'm on track to get to the shortlist to do the pitch-a-thon, which is this Guinness World Record 72 hours of people pitching businesses to Richard and his team. And then, you know, from that, people get forwards. So I want votes. Also doing crowdfunding, but, you know, votes, I really want the votes. So if people want to vote, if they believe that this is worth it and they want to vote for a Sheffield business and a Sheffield businesswoman, just go onto the Voom website, search Rovernighter, which is with an overnighter with an R, and just vote.
Right. So those votes are really, really valuable. Those will push you up into the top 40. And there we go. Superb. You are also doing crowdfunding campaign.
I'm doing a crowdfunding campaign, which is also on the Voom pitch as well. And we have got various offers on there, you know, so people will get something for their contribution.
For their pledge.
And, you know, the whole point of that is to allow us to extend the range to get it out there because, and also in the Voom competition, those people whose crowdfunding has done really well will actually get into an extra part of the competition, which will give them extra finance. So if people believe in the product and, you know, want to see it succeed, if they would like to contribute as small as they like or as much as they like, that would be brilliant.
Superb. I mean, the power of the crowd is an incredible thing, isn't it? We've had crowd-funded businesses on this programme in the past. We've had Savvy Spreads, who did an equity crowdfunding campaign. Yeah. And we've talked about all sorts of others, interviewed many others. And it's kind of market testing of an idea, but it's marketing as well, isn't it? It's getting that crowd power behind you to spread the word too.
Well, absolutely. And interestingly enough, I've had approaches direct from Virgin, the PR company working for Virgin, and also crowdfunding, because they've looked at the pitches that are there and they want to highlight the interesting and the good pitches that they think have value. So not only have we had Theo Pavitis's endorsement, but I've now had them going, you know, these are professional people who've looked at it and gone, this is worth putting out there. Because they're not looking at every pitch and going, yeah, put it out there. They are picking the ones they think have a good chance.
Yes, which is lovely.
Yeah, nice to know.
Yeah, it is. That's great. So we've also talked a little bit about business support and how businesses, we talked outside the studio a little bit about that, and Enterprise Nation, which is a network set up by Emma Jones, supporting home-based businesses and freelancers and so on. Now, they've opened their Northern office in Barnsley as well of course. And they run all sorts of events that are either free or very low cost for people. There are There are other business support agencies, incubators and so on. It's been a time of significant change for the government-led business support programme.
Absolutely.
Now, what business support have you drawn on? Where have you gone for help and advice and support?
Right. Well, I'm involved with Business Nation, actually, because they have done a female entrepreneurs workshops about...
Enterprise Nation.
I've been involved in that.
Right.
I also do obviously local business networking as well, and work with other businesses and talk to people. I mean, I have got a couple of small businesses that are helping me out in the areas that I need. And I think that's the thing about a business owner or running your own business. There are some bits that you think I don't want to do or can't do or don't enjoy doing, and that blood, sweat and tears is not worth it. So for me, one of the things was giving the accounts to somebody else.
Yeah.
I mean, then I've sat and cried in front of the HMRC website and shouted at my going, but it does balance. And I just thought, the time it's taking me and the stress it's causing me and the fact that I'm probably not doing it right wasn't worth it. It's much better to find somebody who could do that. So I think we need the support of the people that can help us around us. And that, like I say, that this can be a lonely journey working on your own. So, you know, I mean, I'm lucky I've got a dog, obviously. Otherwise, I wouldn't have come up with a product. So I take my dog out for a walk and talk to people. But I think if you work on your own, you do need to go out and see networks. And you don't necessarily need to pay for big networks. You know, there are business networks out there where you pay to be part of. You don't need that necessarily. But there are other small networks out there. And, you know, they're easy to find because we've got the internet, so, you know, we can always find things. And I think get out and talk to people and, you know, go to the events you've just mentioned, you know, things like that. You will never know who you meet who could help you. I went to a business breakfast, in fact, that you were at one time, and I was doing something and I got some funding from somebody because they were there.
So.
And they met me.
And that would not have happened if you hadn't been to that event.
Absolutely.
So, great stuff. Well, let's just give a quick mention for a couple of other events coming up, because sage advice there from Ruth Lucas and a demonstration how important these are. Hartshaw, the accountants, run their monthly business breakfast networking events, and the next one of those takes place on Tuesday the 19th of April. That's out over at the Advanced Manufacturing Park. Free to go to. It's from 8 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. I went along to the last one. Really, really interesting. All you need to do to find out more about that one is go to Hartshaw Accountants website. Listeners, if you think that will be helpful to you, then go along. And again, just like Ruth did, you might find someone who can really help you out in business. We've also already mentioned, of course, the Social Enterprise Social that takes place next week. You can book for that online at Eventbrite. And last week, I think I mentioned the Business and Information Centre at the library and all their events about design and IP and protecting your IP in business. So those are free too.
And I actually went to some of those.
Did you?
Because they have a IP workshop.
That's
not a workshop. You can speak to an IP or a trademark solicitor. You can get a free half hour. And I originally went and talked to them about the idea to see if there was such an idea out there.
Superb.
And, you know, got some advice. And have been to some of those events. And they can be worth going to, definitely.
Yeah, most definitely. Great. So get along to events. Great advice there from Ruth. And obviously that's worked really, really well for you. Now, Sheffield at the moment, in terms of entrepreneurs and startups, does it feel like an exciting place to be?
I think it is, yeah. I think there's quite a lot of energy around getting things started. And some are really good businesses, it has to be said. You know, there are some people out there who have got really good businesses. But, you know, sometimes business ideas, you need to test them and see how they go. And sometimes you need to tweak them. And you might have an idea, test it out with some people, see what they think. And don't just test it with your friends. Because most of your friends and family won't go, oh, that's rubbish.
No, they'll give you the answer they think you want to hear.
Yeah. But, you know, and sometimes, I mean, I know with other people, somebody who does my mugs for me, for example, he was talking to me. I met him, obviously got some of my mugs, some of my, you know, kind of like paraphernalia we have around with the bags as well. And he went, oh, well, we started small, we went craft fairs and, you know, blah, 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 you know, because they do print design stuff. He went, well, you've got on the other end, you've started big with Gruffs. And I was like, yeah, just jump in there with both feet. But, you know, you need to look at what your business is and what is its logical route.
Yes. Yeah. So then you can you can ask the most appropriate people for help, support, expertise as well. Go to the most appropriate funders or backers if there's funding available. And go to the most appropriate events and so on. Excellent. Well, you're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. Ruth Lucas has been our guest in the studio today, talking about Rover Nita. And there are a few ways that listeners might like to follow up on today's conversation. First of all, Ruth is shortlisted in the Boom pitch. And so what do listeners need to do? They need to vote.
They need to vote, yes. So just go on to Voom 2016. So just Google that, V-O-O-M. And then when you look there, you can search pitches, just search Rover Nita, vote for the pitch. You just need to verify it with Facebook or LinkedIn. Takes less than a minute.
And if listeners do that and they can lift you so you're into the top 40 of those pitches.
Yeah, well, the top 80 get through, yeah. And we're currently around about 40th, yep. But obviously I'd love to win the pitches.
Yeah.
And I'd love to get the chance to take the dog to meet Richard Branson.
Yes, absolutely. The dog would love it too.
She would, yeah. They've got matching beards.
And of course, people can also follow you on Twitter.
Twitter, and yeah, we've got a Facebook page as well. And if they want to buy a bag or they want to see me and see the bags, they can. So, I'm happily bring a bag out and demonstrate it in Sheffield to people.
And we want to see it being put up or down in 17 seconds, of course.
I'll do it faster than that, I promise you.
So Twitter is at Rover Nita.
Yes.
Facebook, Rover Nita, presumably.
Yes.
Website, rovernita.co.uk.
Yes.
And then don't get distracted by all the dog-related hashtags on Twitter. So, Ruth, thanks ever so much for joining us today in the studio. That's been absolutely fascinating. And obviously all the best with Rover Nita as you take this idea, which has been 2 years of iteration from dream to, well, from need to trying to find a solution yourself to, well, if I can't find it, then someone else probably needs it. Yes, they definitely do. To I could make this happen, to launching your own business. What an exciting journey for you and for the dog.
Yeah, Bronwyn's the star of the show, to be honest.
But a superb journey and an inspiration for anyone thinking of launching a product-related business. You've given some great advice here as well in terms of funding, in terms of backing, in terms of marketing and PR, also in terms of getting people behind you, and of course, supply chain, risk, and so on. Really, really helpful. We want to see this succeed. We'll have you back on the programme in a few months and follow the progress, which will be superb. And I'm sure we'll bump into you at one of the multitude of business events which we talk about on this programme, which have clearly been really helpful for you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
So, Ruth, thank you.
Thank you.
This has been Business Live on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. We're back on air next Friday from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. So tune in then, because on air next Friday, we have Damien Bates, who's the owner of Sheffield Speedway, in a brand new interview. We also have Louise Page. She's a playwright. Her plays have been performed all over the UK, but she's also a business writing expert. And she's going to give you some tips for writing clearly, concisely, and getting your message across for businesses. So tune in then next Friday, 9 a.m. through to 10 a.m. But don't go away now, because next up on Sheffield Live is our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk. That's on from 10 all the way through to noon, playing the best of folk music from the UK and all round the world. In the studio today also has been Cheng Chen, who's a broadcast journalism student who's helping out at Sheffield Live this week. And we really value your involvement and support with Sheffield Live this week. Thanks for coming in. And also in the studio has been Sangeeta, our sound engineer. Although I should add that the complete and utter butchery of Bon Jovi was all my doing. And I hold my hand up. I did that. So thanks for tuning in. Sheffield Live, Business Live. We're back next week, 9 a.m. through to 10 a.m. Next up, thank goodness, it's folk.
Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield. Made by you.